All right.
I don't know. Right. I got a lot of books.
Lightning round, Steve. I'm going to ring out a bell. 2 minutes and you're done.
This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome back, Indie Comic Book Noise listeners. It's episode 426, if you can believe it. We are the Indie Comic Book Noise, and I have good news for everyone. We have a full boat today. A full load. All the hosts are showing up.
Don't rock the boat.
And that was Super Steve dialing in from the bunker here to make sure that the trains run on time and the podcast gets put out. We also have the Canadian twosome, the daring duo.
Stop putting us together.
I mercilessly profile them due to their country of origin. It's
racist.
It's Phil, whose dulcet tones you just heard. The Ottawa Otter. And then Kevin, WWX, calling from the Fortress of Steel.
Ooh,
why does everyone get a base but me?
You have the den, the otter's den.
Wow, you're expanding his mythology here.
Yep.
And
I like shack of sticks.
I like that Andrew's become the voice of Indie Comic Book Noise. You know, it was for a while there when I was doing the intros to both this and Marvel Noise. It was, you know, it all sounded too much the same. So it's now that I'm not doing this show as often to be able to keep up with your prolific output. It's awesome that Andrew settled in as the rock steady voice of the Indie Comic Book Noise podcast.
I don't think he's as happy about it.
No, but these are the sacrifices we make at the Indie Comic Book Noise as part of the Deliberate Noise family. Lots of great shows on the network. Many thanks, as always, to Derek Coward, the boss, the head brain, the man that makes all the little ones and zeros line up and march out the door correctly.
And puts them all together.
And we also, you may hear some of us on Marvel Noise, our sister show, where we talk about all things Marvel. That the big difference there is it's a family-friendly show. You heard from the intro at the beginning. We may have some plussed up language, some salty language. It's nothing too extreme. We're generally pretty funny fellows.
I don't even swear anymore.
Yeah, Phil's really mellowed out. So
yeah,
I know, down. But he brings it out in us, though.
Maybe yeah, someday.
You guys are the assholes now.
Maybe someday we'll be able to remove that warning. You can find old episodes and information about the show on our website, Indie Comic Book Noise. There you could go back to even before we were part of this whole thing. That's how far back the archives go. Although I don't know why you'd want to go back and listen to ones before we took over. But we're on Twitter, Indie Comic Book N. We have individual Twitter handles, which I'll skip for now. And that's about it for our normal chit-chattering, setting the table. And speaking of setting the table, this is a very informal show. We tend to talk about comic book related media, including the paper floppies themselves, TV shows, movies, video games. We also talk about shows we've attended. And we just generally,
I heard you attended a show.
I did attend a show. I went to, like all comic book shows, it's one of these companies that runs several different ones. In fact, they have one coming up in Chicago. So it's the Comic-Con Revolution, people. I went to their Ontario, California, not Ontario.
Well, I thought you meant Ontario, Canada first.
Yeah.
No, it was interesting going back to Ontario. It's a fun little show. What's interesting is for the size of it, they always pull in a few bigger names. So while it's mostly like a local show, they did have Mike Zeck was there, and he had a long line. It was a two-day show. I only went Saturday. He had a long line every time I saw. They brought in Jimmy and Amanda, That's Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor. Again, they had a long line the whole show. Nick Spencer. So some pretty big names mixed in with the local talent. The other thing I really liked was they put the autograph people in a separate little hall.
You could go stand out in the hall.
Which is nice, because then those places tend to have kind of crazy lines. The other thing they do is they sort of theme around a big property, and this one was the Transformers animated cartoon. So they had the voice of Optimus Prime was one of their big guests. And the one time I stuck my head in that room, he had a long line of people dressed up like Optimus Prime and with toys and everything for him to sign. Plus, out here, we get a lot of animation voice over actors.
Sure.
So there looked to be a lot of that. I'm not really up on who that is, but I know they had the Skeletor Alan Oppenheimer.
Like the original Skeletor, yeah?
Yeah, the guy that was the voice of Skeletor was there. Mm-hmm. And they also do panels. I didn't go to any this year because we had a hard out for another event and we had lunch with some friends. So that kind of meant that whatever time I had was going to be spent wandering the floor looking at old comics and toys. There are some back issue dealers there. Very little original art. Just those guys. There's always those vendors that have a mix of everything. You know, a couple pages of OA, some back issues, a few toys, but there were no, like, dedicated, here's the, you know, portfolios full of original art. So it wasn't a lot in that front. I did buy a comic from someone, the writer of the comic. I'll discuss that later. And I bought an old Thunderbolts first appearance. I'm always running those down. So I got another.
You're not tired of the Thunderbolts yet?
No. I got another one of the first appearance of Melissa.
Yeah.
So I'm getting a short little stack of those. I always balk at the relatively modest back issue price, but at the end of the day, Andy's a sucker. And I'll buy it.
I didn't even know that was the first appearance.
Spend too much?
Yeah, well, neither did the vendor, because they all know it as the death of Deathlok.
Oh, geez.
And I also need to, I educated him. I'm like, well, you know, it's the first appearance of.
That'll be another $10.
So I bought that one. What was funny was they had that Marvel Tales spelled like a cat's tail that has the first Spider-Ham. That thing has gone through the roof. They were trying to sell a newsstand edition for $100.
Yeah.
And well, I'm sure.
Is Spider Ham comics worth a lot?
I guess the first appearance is. I've seen it for a high price. I don't know if people are paying that. But this is two shows in a row.
Is that the one with the Goose Rider on the cover, too?
I believe that is. He's in the little corner box thing. But yeah, that's two shows in a row I've seen very steep price tags on. So. I don't know. I'm sure my copy I gave away years ago, but if you have yours, boys, now might be the time to get that thing pressed and graded. And
I have all the Spider Hams, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love Spider Ham.
I did, too. I'm excited. I brought the little trade when they collected them all, and I know they're having another collection of them.
For me, it was the backups, though, just seeing the other characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Goose Rider and Doctor Doom and all those. It was a fun time. But yeah, that's a big moneymaker now. So I didn't spend a ton of time there, just some in the morning, lunch, and then some in the afternoon. But I enjoy the show. They did fix their security issues as far as the line was not bad. They allowed pre-ticket holders to show up an hour early. And we basically timed it so it was just near the end of that extra hour. And there was very little security. I mean, they had the, like, four or five metal detectors, which I'm always kind of blah on as far as I'm not sure how effective those things are. But at least it didn't take a long time to get through it.
I think they might have needed the extra staff to police the line over at Mike Zeck's table.
They might. That was. Well, the other weird thing is for some reason they gave him a middle near the not on the end. So they had to have the line kind of further back. So it looks like he has a pretty short line. And then you realize, like, oh, no, you got to look 20 feet over. Those are all the other people they just didn't want to block everyone's table. So I thought that was nice that they had volunteer. You know, they were managing the line, but I guess they didn't. They should have given him a table on the end so he wouldn't. So the line would have been clearer to follow. If that makes sense. But I like that they did monitor it. And it's a good show. I went to the panel last year. They had the Batman the Animated Series panel with the voice talent. They had Conroy, who's Batman, and Lester, I think, who's Robin, and Poison Ivy, and the Andrea, the director, voice recruiter, and a bunch of people. And that was a real fun panel. But while I watched the Transformers cartoon, I didn't have any interest in going to the... I don't rewatch it or anything, and so it wasn't anything that lured me in. And Kevin, I understand you went to a show.
I did. I went to the craziest show you can imagine. Everything's on display. Nothing's off limits. TCAF, that's what I'm talking about. Toronto Comic Arts Festival inside the Toronto Reference Library.
So
multi-floored.
So it wasn't
venues.
So it wasn't a Wizard World Kitchener?
Wow. That's a nice reference. No, it was not.
Wizard World's coming back. They're in L.A. this year. I don't know of anyone that's going, but they are. They're making a final. They haven't gone away, people.
I remember there was a Wizard World Toronto for like 1 or 2 years. Which is weird.
I don't think they're good. I think they've really gone into the celebrity focus, which is fine. But when I last looked at the thing, I don't think they had any comic guests listed. It was all Ghostbuster stuff.
Yeah, that would make sense.
But anyways, I distracted you. Get us back on target here.
I got there late this year, Andrew. So any plans I had or any things that I might have went to, like panels and cool stuff, I pretty much didn't go to.
You spent it all waiting in line to get in?
No, it's just, I don't know. It was a combination of things and me not wanting to go an extra day because I don't know if you ever look at convention hotel prices.
Rarely. Rarely.
I was back at the hotel I was at years ago. Let me put it that way. Because it was like, I don't know, usually like a $20 difference or something. And it's like, oh, you can be at the official convention hotel where panels are going on. And it's just like around the block from the library. I'm like, cool. But then like this year, it's like, hey, here's the convention hotel price. And I was just like, I'm like, if that's the deal, I don't want to know what the regular price is. So I guess I had to stick it to the man. And I'm like, I'm not paying that price. That's like outrageous. So I kept on searching for days and days for like a better hotel price. And I found one for one night, like one room remaining type of thing. So that's all I went for. And then I get to the con and there's like con festival, whatever. There's like 2 hours left on a Saturday. So needless to say, I wasn't commissioning any artwork or going to any exciting panels because they had some cool legendary people there. So I did pick up some cool books, though.
Were any of those people tabling as well or just doing panels?
Like a portion of those people are always just in signing areas because it's usually if you're flying in from like Japan or someplace in Europe or something, like they usually have them like, I don't know, in the lower floor in the signing area or somewhere or like in a separate building, like a ticketed line or something. I mean, it's usually free tickets. They just want to keep order and control over some of these things.
Well, give us some of these names. Stop teasing us.
Stop teasing.
On the edge of my seat here.
Well, this is one of those things where I had a moment of like the reader collector, seller, all bumped into each other at the same time because you had the whole Wiccan Divine creative team, McKelvey, Gillen, and then the like the and if you add enough and like Stephanie Hans, then you have the die creative team too as well, right?
Yep. I don't know. I don't remember who the letterer is, but you got a lot of them.
We'll just throw the letter under the bus. That doesn't count, right, Andrew?
Well,
unless it's John Workman.
I do usually fail to give their credits, so I can't really blame you for not being on top of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a lot of letterers that I remember going to a lot of shows. Like, maybe if you're, like, doing two things, if, like, you're the inker or the letterer, or if you're the production guy, and then maybe you show up at shows. Not a lot of letterers.
What John Workman does at shows, which is cool, is he has, like, little classic hand-folded wax pack-type trading cards that have all types of information on them about, like, different projects that he worked on in the past, and has little anecdotes from him about it and stuff, all drawn and lettered by him. So it's all stuff. It's like a cool way for a letter to have almost the equivalent of prints, but it also becomes a source of talking because he'll show you them, he'll start talking to you about them and stuff. He's good people.
So the other crazy guess that you might be excited by, Gabriel Ba, Jason, Junji Ito, the Japanese horror master.
Well, I recognize recognize two of those three names.
Yeah.
He was nice. There, really?
That's nice. Awesome. Fabio Moon.
That's some big names. That's that. Sure.
Stoko was there.
Really, eh?
Yeah, I actually got one of his, I don't know what you would call this.
Usually the sound place you go to here at the library sounds pretty lame, but there's a lot of names I'm very happy with this time.
Yeah, you're on a roll. Yep.
I know people that sell like a million copies through Scholastic, feels just like, that sounds pretty lame.
I just got the Stoko oversized hardcover collection of the Aliens Dead Orbit limited series.
I had
read it digitally, but now I'm looking forward to reading it, you know, oversized and really being able to soak in the detailed artwork.
Yeah. It seemed like he had a whole stack going there that he was selling, and it was so hard to get to his table, especially when you get there in like in the afternoon. Traditionally really busy Saturday afternoon, and his table was always jammed with people.
Yeah, all those fans of Sullivan Sluggers you have to get through.
Hey, remember I bought that not too long ago by accident?
You know, I didn't want to tell anyone, like, there was a guy in the lineup with Sullivan Sluggers, and I was like, ooh, I wonder how that's going to go over. Oh,
I don't remember that was what you guys told me was bad about it, but I know you guys shamed me.
No, it's just the writer, but the art's still good.
I still have my copy.
Done with good intentions. Yeah, the art was done with good intentions.
Yeah, I still have my copy for sale at the local shows. I mean, like, you got to have some variety in indie stuff, right?
Well, all right. I know the burning question everyone has in their mind, Kevin. How many comic books did you sell?
Sell?
Yeah, you're the big tabler now.
Not this time. He could barely get a room.
This is all a buying show.
Oh, so you're stocking up your inventory at this one?
Not so much. I mean, I go to my usual places, my usual people. Like, I always pick up some Jesse Jacobs stuff.
That
some
German Cat stuff.
You always see you're questionable with you. There was like, it's not like there's like super censorship at other cons, but they always say, oh, if you have like explicit materials, make sure you have it like in a binder or whatever, right? It's like, or like really gory stuff.
And really? It has to be in a binder now?
I like when they just put the little post-its over the women's breasts.
Yeah, nudity, I understand.
That's what I mean. I mean, like, you gotta, if the show is family-friendly, like, I'm not gonna say the TCAF is family-friendly, but it is, like, a library general audience, but there's always stuff on display that I'm like, should that be on display? It's just strange. I'm like, did you have that on display when people did the first round through? Or because, you know, they have their books like folded open or whatever to show you what's inside. And then they'll just be whatever, like, I don't know, some autopsy going on or something. And you'll be like, really, is that the page you have with to?
Science.
I guess so.
Science.
I guess
so.
It's just so strange. Or someone just with their legs spread open, like the two pages of it. I'm just like, really? It's just weird.
How about Milo Manero? Are we allowed to have Milo Manero?
That would be an interesting guest.
Yeah, shoot. I'd love for him to be stateside.
Yeah. I mean, if he was ever going to show up at a thing, I'd expect, like, TCAF to be the type of show. Oh, I got another issue of Pope Hats.
You're saying that like we should know what it is.
Everyone knows Pope Hats. Andrew, you know Pope Hats.
All I know is you keep ramming this Pope Hat business down my throat. See? And I told you, I don't want things that are involved. I don't like legal comic books. No apologies to Charles Soule's Daredevil, but.
Well, good to know, Andrew. The legal story has completed itself, and because it was collected in that hardcover Young Francis. And now Pope Hats has moved on to other subject matter, so now you can avoid it for totally different reasons.
Well, maybe I'll try it now. How about that?
I also picked up some different books, like some Black Mask stuff and everything. You know, just get a good sampling. Oh, and of course, drop by the study group table. See some of the Kickstarter stuff and all the other crazy stuff they have. So it was a good show. Wish I had more time. I mean, and then I was sort of like hungry, but I'm like, I have stuff to go through. I have other places to go to. I have bins to cover. So I'm like, food will have to wait. I got to dig through some comics.
Is the show getting too big for the library yet?
I don't think so. They still have another floor to go, I think, if they wanted to expand. And they had some of like the live drawing with like whoever signs up, I guess. I don't really know how that works in the other building, like down the street. But I think they had like an image pavilion there one year, and that seems a little scaled back. I don't know. Maybe it was a decision where like all the image guys being in one place and some people didn't go there. Like, I don't really know how. I kind of wonder when you're in different buildings, like how that works out. Like, maybe it's better to have the panel, some of the big panels and live draw things in a separate building, but have all the people that are selling things in the library proper. I just kind of wonder.
Well, it sounds like a good show. And it's free, too. That's a big plus.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, always stop by at the Beguiling and had to pick up my GoBots and stuff like that.
Good old GoBots. I never cared about them until now.
All right, Steve, what have you been reading?
Did you guys cover the new Buffy book on any of these in between?
Nope. I was going to, but not yet. Nope.
There's a new Buffy book written by Jordi Belair.
And you know, Angel. There's
we know her from, you know, she's been a colorist extraordinaire for years, right? And the art is by Dan Mora, whose stuff on, I think his favorite work of mine is his Klaus, you know, Santa Claus stuff with Grant Morrison that he's been doing the last several years. Mora's a beast. He's good, got a real good line. And good storyteller as well. So I'm thinking a new Buffy series. All right, that's interesting. And then I see it's from Boom, and I'm like, uh-oh. And I'm thinking, how are they going to do that? You know, are they going to do season 13 or 14 or whatever it would have been up to and, like, move the story forward or, you know, go back to the old high school days where Buffy's stories seemed most relevant, like the never manifested Buffy animated cartoon would have been that kind of thing, or go further back, right? Because when the Buffy show started, she's already been thrown out of a school and had the events of the Buffy movie previous to that. Like, she had adventures before that whole coming to the Hellmouth and everything. Well, they chose to go back to the high school years, but with a big caveat that was too much for me to get over, guys. They're telling... Go ahead.
You didn't like that they modernized or rebooted everything?
It's not just a modernization, it's a reboot. They're telling the whole story over where Buffy has never met Willow or Xander and everything. She's coming to town. They're telling the TV series over again, but it's all different.
It's more. And, it's not as good either. Like,
well, what's weird is all the characters are right there from the get-go. Like, from Giles to Spike to Anya, all these characters that, like, came into the series much later are all there right from the start, and they're all portrayed with, like, the likenesses from later on in their characters' development and story arc. Like, Willow's already got the trendy haircut, and she's already a witch, even though Buffy's never met her before. You know, she's not the shy nerd that through her life with Buffy, like, and trying to fight as and help out just as, like, the smart one who is helping do the research and stuff, who eventually comes across the, you know, there's no, like, where's that character grow from here kind of thing.
And if I remember correctly, it seemed like Spike was going to be taking over the Angel role a bit.
He's right there from the beginning. He was... Yeah. You know,
where that should be Angel at the
beginning. Was the master at first. Mm-hmm. Remember, that was the big bad in the first season. And then Angel and Drusilla came around and all that. But I mean, the art is great. The storytelling is sound. It's Dan Mora. But, you know, already knowing years worth of continuity with these characters doesn't make me to want to forget what I loved and start totally over, not knowing anything. Like, all of these characters got mind wiped and put in the Matrix. So I mean, it seems like it's a good book, but a hard pass for me.
Yeah, good book for new people to Buffy, but yeah, for us fans, it's not anything special. And they just had an Angel Zero, so he's getting his own series too. So they're definitely going all in, but yeah, it's definitely a pass for me. I tried the first four, I think.
Sounds like Ultimate Buffy.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah, that would make sense. Yeah.
And no one can say, Phil, you don't give someone a fair shake. Like, well, four issues Buffy is a pretty good bite, you know?
I did too.
Well, Buffy, I've collected all the Buffys and Angels since, not the old stuff, but the Joss Whedon stuff there. Like, I collected all that stuff. So for me, I was excited for more Buffy, but yeah, wasn't that great.
I think that's the only type of series that would get me reading something like that if it was really good, because I'm kind of, I don't know, not like I watch the TV series and I'm like, I'm over it. Like, I don't need any more. But if it was like a really good reboot, I guess I would read one. I don't know.
You know, Andrew, it's hard to not try a new series if you're pre-ordering. For, you know, you end up with the first four issues before you realize, nah,
That's why I don't pre-order, though, but then I end up anyway. So
yeah, I don't know what this pre-order business here, you guys are. I'm unfamiliar with this concept.
Yeah.
It's like having the Fast Pass at Disney.
Remember, I just go into the store, and if it's there, I buy it, and if it's not, it doesn't exist.
I mean, I use that philosophy for other industries, but comics, not one of those that I can employ that method with.
All right, Phil, what have you been? Is there anything you would like to bring to the table?
Well, I restarted Walking Dead, those comics, but it's not holding up for me, so I don't think I'm gonna go all the way through. But I do have some manga.
Wait, so when you restarted, did you restart from like the beginning of the series?
Issue one, and I think right now I'm at where the governor pops in.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah,
and I've been watching the show at the same time just to compare the differences, you know?
I haven't read though. I mean, we jumped on somewhere in the high 70s, so I read all that bunch. And it was fun, but I haven't reread. I don't think I would. I've fallen so far behind on that. I'm probably about four trades behind. It was, I don't know, every time I read it, I really enjoy it, but I never have a hankering for it. But if someone puts it in my hands, I'll read it and enjoy it.
Yeah, I think it's just because I'm a little bored of it a bit now, and just the shock is all gone because I know everything that's happening. But yeah, I jumped on Walking Dead originally with issues six, I think it was.
Whoa, those are some good issues to have. I think those are...
Yeah.
Kevin's probably all excited about.
I sold those for $1 each.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah, that was probably one of the worst comic decisions to make.
Wow.
So see, Phil, he can get $1 for you for those issues.
But yeah, but otherwise I've been reading a lot of manga, and one I've read that's really cool is from 1972 to 74. Is The Drifting Classroom.
Huh.
Have you guys heard of that one?
I read the whole series.
Yeah, I know you have. do you guys remember that series that I loved by Boom Woods?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know at the time, but I guess that guy loved Drifting Classroom because it's the exact same story, pretty much. But The Drifting Classroom, I think, is something that everyone should have in their collection. I've only been able to get the first three books so far. I haven't bought ahead. There's 11 because... 7, 8, and 11, I can't find for a good price. But there is a collected version coming out in November with the first three or four books in. So I do have I'll just have to wait a while, but...
That's like me with Sweating to the Oldies. I can find volumes 1, 2, and 5, but 3 and 4, man.
Yeah, and it sucks when you can't.
So these are English copies, or are they in Japanese?
These are English ones. Whatever the first print was, but basically what it is there's like an earthquake or something and a whole school just disappears and it shows up in this, like, basically it's the future and just everything is destroyed and under ash kind of thing. And you just see like the kids and the adults just start to like freak out and like people are dying left and right in these horrible ways, like little kids and stuff. And by the end of the second book, there's no adults left except for one. Like, it's like I can't imagine what they're going to do for the next 8 books or whatever, 9 books. But it's the artwork's amazing. I can't believe this was done in 72 because I feel like it was really ahead of its time.
Well, it is Japan. But yeah, compared to like American comics, like this would be like, I don't know, like really underground indie comic type of thing.
Yeah, and I really do believe everyone should have this comic from what I've read so far. And the other one I've read was Dragonhead, which I think Kevin read also.
Yeah, I've read the whole series.
Yeah,
I remember buying a few volumes at a time from The Beguiling and them saying, hey, this is going out of print. And then I'm like, yeah, I better buy a few more.
That was also a hard one to get, but I got all the volumes for about 10 to 16 bucks each. So it wasn't too, too bad.
Now, when they print these, do you read them backwards like the manga, or are they printed?
That's you have no idea how much that's fucking me up. Like, I'll read normal comics now, like, and I don't know what's going on. I'm reading backwards. I'm reading all over the place now. So it's definitely messing with my system a bit. It's kind of like when you pick up an analog controller for video games for the first time and you just can't get what's going on. But
I know I've heard of people that have trouble with this, like going back and forth, but I have no trouble. So
but yeah, I'm completely addicted now.
And then I know there was, you know, before they actually printed some of these comics correctly, they would like mirror or like flip some of the panels and I guess you're basically cutting out all the stuff and repasting it on to.
I would rather have that myself. Ugh. I don't like the backwards way. I think it makes no sense to me, like why a whole culture would want to read like that.
Well, maybe we're the backwards ones. Did I just blow your mind?
I don't know. I think
flip the map over and there's another universe on the other side of the map.
A cover, front cover should be on the front.
I just have a problem.
It is on the front. I don't know what the argument is. The spine might be on the other side, but the front cover is still the front cover.
I can turn the pages, but sometimes I do inadvertently just start reading the panels the wrong way because my eyes just go automatic. You know, I'm used to reading it. So whenever I'm reading it, it is a conscious effort. So sometimes I get sort of spoiled, I guess, or whatever, you know, because I just look the wrong way because, you know, thousands of pages have trained my pea brain to look that way.
I don't read it at all. I just flip through it and look for the sex scenes.
Yeah. I'm trying to avoid those ones, like the creepy ones, because, man, they're into, I swear, some of them, like it's crazy. Like, I have gotten hit a few times. Like, there's one I got called Don't Meddle With My Daughter. And I know the title now that I know it's creepy. But here's the premise, though. Like, it was basically a daughter was a mother retired from being like a Wonder Woman or Supergirl type character, and the daughter was taking over. And it's about the mother behind the scenes making sure she doesn't get hurt and stuff. So it sounds awesome, right? But then I get it, and it's like the mother's like eating out the villains and stuff like that. Like, it's completely creepy, and it really sucks because it did sound like a fun premise. But
and you get all that from Savage Dragon, right, Phil?
Yeah, exactly. I do get enough from that. So overall, I've only been hit with a few. I've been pretty lucky. I've gotten some I've hated, but a lot of the ones I've picked out have been pretty fun. This is kind of a phase, though. I'm going to keep collecting a couple of them, but otherwise, you know, I'm just going to do this just for a tiny bit and then I'll stop because I think I got kind of all the good ones.
No. Two series? No, you didn't get all the good ones.
No, I got a lot more than that, Kevin.
Okay. Well, we'll have to do a whole episode on it.
I picked up like 50 different titles plus multiple volumes for them. So I've definitely, I've tried a lot.
Stay tuned for Manga Noise with Phil and Kevin.
No. I'm not going to talk about it too much on the show because me and Kevin I'm hoping he'll do like just a manga episode with me and I'll go through them.
Maybe. Holiday, I'll send Phil an email. Yeah.
It'll never happen.
Well, I'm glad. It's always good when you find some new pocket or genre. It is fun to kind of dive in because you have the whole world of it in front of you. Like, it's a whole buffet of all the stuff that, like, you're reading books from the 70s and from today and everything. It makes it fun, especially because you can skip the ones that aren't, you know, there's enough reviews and opinions you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an expensive habit, though, to collect manga.
Yeah. It ain't like these floppies that getting up to $4 or $5 a pop are cheap either, though.
Yeah. But you can find better deals in comics than you can manga, I'm finding out.
Yeah.
Unless you want like a destroyed copy. Like I bought some copies for a few bucks, but they're from libraries, like, and stuff, so they have all the library stickers on them.
I don't mind that. Besides, it's nice to get to see like patrons have colored in pages and stuff, you know.
It covers up the spine though. So it looks bad on the shelf.
Mm. Oh, I can see that. Or you can just start organizing all your comics by the Dewey Decimal System, and then it'll fit right in.
Oh, boy. Alphabetical it was too difficult, so they had to come up with something else.
Mm-hmm. Bring all your other manga to the library and say, can you make it match the ones I bought from you?
Yeah.
Well, you know, when you have those adults running over the kids, that's good times.
That was the second volume, yeah. The one adult left is chasing the kids with the car and like hitting them and stuff. Like it's just brutal.
I was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And I suppose Kevin has also provided you with all the titles that prominently feature cats.
That's actually that's what I'm interested to find out about him. I want to, after he sees what I've read, I want to see if he could tell me any I've missed, maybe like some of the big ones.
Maybe. I got to think there's a bunch of cat ones you've missed.
Because a lot of the ones Kevin talked about, I got. You got
What's Michael and the cheese sweet?
No, like the good ones you talked about, like Assassination Classroom, you know, things like that.
I only read one or two volumes of that.
I'm at three for that right now.
It was, I guess it was too shonen for me.
Anyway, we should save the guys because that was a lot of manga talk, and I know that's going to hurt them.
You didn't even go into the plot of Dragonhead.
Ah, I got bored.
All right, Steve, you can put this indie comic book noise show on the Western track again, I'm sure.
All right, how about the back nine of Dark Arc from Aftershock?
Oh, you're still reading that? Yeah.
We talked about the first few issues on a past episode, written by Cullen Bunn with art by Juan Doe, and the color palette that he uses is real Juan Doe-ish, really interesting. But I read issues 6 through 15 of 15, the series ended, and, you know, we talked about it. It's two arcs, you know, the Noah has his arc, the one that we all know about, and then there's this other one that's filled with, like, supernatural and demon-like mythological creatures, and it's helmed by this grim human sorcerer and his family, and he's got to deal with the devil that, you know, him and his family are supposed to survive or something like that for him to take on this task. So the flood was full swing, you know, and so all the denizens of the Ark here, Cap Fever setting in. There's some Lord of the Flies action going on with, you know, people trying to take charge and a failed mutiny. And there were some unicorns that were accidentally put on that Ark and not Noah's Ark. And they end up getting killed. So then there's a whole murder thing and justice has to be met out as it would be on this Dark Ark. But tensions continue to rise over the rest of the series. It's definitely a tension book. And another mutiny occurs, this time successful, leaving the vampire in charge. The Ark finally reaches land, but the land is inhabited by these ancient hunter native types who have a reveal that I won't spoil. But I will say that their design is really cool. They're like tall and thin, but muscular with almost skullish type faces with odd bones coming out of their heads and stuff. The humans all make sacrifices to try to save each other, to try to save their family, but not all survive. And those who do, you know, are changed forever. It took a turn that I didn't expect when they reached land and came across these bunch of, like, savages, considering there was just the big flood, right? 40 days, 40 nights. They don't really get into how they managed to survive that. But, you know, it was a fun ride to see that there were different kind of arcs within the series itself, that there was a story that they were telling there. And then all of a sudden, the last two issues, they like wrap it up. They hit land. These savages come and like wipe most of them out. Someone has to make a few deals and wheels and try to be clever. And then you get kind of the status quo as it is as the book ends. It was a little bit of a deus ex machina at the end there, but so be it. It was more about looking at Doe's artwork and storytelling.
Did it feel like a rushed ending, or?
I mean, for the amount of time they spent on the arc, it, something else needed to kind of happen. But yeah, I mean, it's like they hit the island and then there's two issues and mm-hmm. things are over. And part of it is a kind of a culling of these different beasts by these hunter native types who have a story of their own. But it all, again, without them really making sense of how they survived the flood there, it seemed like they were just sort of put in there to wrap things up.
Does it seem like something they might be picking up again, or you feel like it's ended?
They could have. It kind of ends with them on the island saying Noah's Ark is still out there and we should try to make sure that it gets steered to us.
Aftershock tends to just move on from series, though, it seems like, because they never really follow back up on stuff.
Well, the Animosity one, isn't that? They've had a couple of ones on that.
Well, that's true. That's probably their biggest property, though.
I wonder, with 16 issues, you could put that in like an oversized,
a nice trade
collection.
Yeah.
Yep, 15.
Nice. All right, Kevin, do you have any books you want to talk about?
I have two books. I don't know if anyone else has these, though.
That's maybe. All right. We know you went to that show. There's no way you didn't grab some German cat book or something.
I didn't buy any cat books this time.
Now there's some sad creator who spent all that time knowing at least I got one sale. You know, my crazy cat comic. I know there's one guy out there that's going to buy it. Now you let them down, Kevin.
I know. I was supposed to buy a cat comic, but hey, I just remembered. Guess what I saw there? Your Iceberg comic.
Did you buy it?
No, because I remembered you told me it wasn't about icebergs, so I was like, I'm not really interested.
Look at that. Our reviews saving each other money. All right.
I know. So, yeah. I just thought it was funny because I'm going by and I'm like, hey, that's that one.
There is a circuit for a certain type of book, and I think you go to certain shows if you're certain types of comic publishers. But
I mean, there's an audience that will enjoy that comic, but that is not me. But anyways, the comic I read, continuing our tradition of like GoBots and all that, I read Dick Tracy Forever #1.
Oh, I read the last Dick Tracy series, but I have not found this comic in the stores I have been to.
Oh, maybe they're letting you down.
I read it.
Oh, nice. So we have Oming and Suma and Lee on letters. How's that? Andrew's going to like that.
I like that. Look at you giving credits and right at the beginning of the review. The training is paying off. I want to hear this, but I also want to hear how it compares to the last Dick Tracy.
It's not like hyper compressed, but it has its own thing. And by the time I got to the end of the issue, I'm like, wait a second, are we doing like that Spider-Man Decades? Like limited series? Like, is that what this series is going to be? Because there's three or four stories in here where it goes to the end, and then you like read the next section, and then you get to the end of the issue, and it's like next issue, it's like 20 years later. I'm like, wait, what?
Maybe it's Jason Aaron.
The next issue is 20 years later?
Well, is that just like a gag? It's so weird. It says continued in 1951, and this issue is in 1931.
Oh, well, it is Dick Tracy like forever.
Well, yeah, maybe the forever is really a forever, because he looks like young on the cover for the next issue they have in here, and it looks like Prune Face is with him, and then it looks like it's, I don't know, it just looks like it's a different era, possibly, because it's the 50s. So I'm like, are we going to go like 71 and then 91? Like, that's an interesting conceit.
I like the format of the three stories There was like a main story, then there was a second story, and then at the end there was a little short story that really was the conclusion of the first story.
Yeah.
And in between there were little puzzle pages, like a little crossword puzzle all set up like an Eisner thing, like on the buildings in different planes. And then another one was, I forget, like a word search or something.
Yeah. And there's even a sequence where he like gets knocked in the head, of course, like these guys always get knocked out. And then you get into like a black and white.
Yeah.
Like, sci-fi, I mean, things where it's like Satellite Sam. That's reminded me of.
There was something I liked about that, but there was something that didn't feel like Dick Tracy-ish to me. That one was a little weird in the second story. Yeah. He's chasing a dude and they're like on a TV show set. And he gets clonked in the head, and then a few pages of the adventure happen in black and white as if, you know, and he's all in retro science fiction garb, and the chase continues, but it's as if they were on this old show. You know, again, it was kind of cute, but at the same time, it didn't feel so Dick Tracy-ish. Oeming really changed up his style again for this, and I don't know if it's all good. Like, he's spotting blacks oddly to my eye, where it's like it's not where I expect them to be, and in some cases they seem really overbearing. Like, it's almost like he's mignoling out a little bit or trying to, and it doesn't always work for me. The same thing with like his line weight, like even on his faces he's experimenting with his brush, and he's experimenting having some lines be really thick where you can really see the brush. It almost looks like he's using a calligraphy pen. You can so see the path of the brush, but the ones that he chooses to make thick versus the ones that he chooses to make thin, I'm not vibing with what he's going for artistically there. It doesn't look right to my eye for whatever that counts for.
So two Dick Tracy theories, two interesting books, I gotta say.
I like the book overall.
So far, like, pretty good experiment.
I like that it's a done in one.
Yeah.
Very much. And the colors by Taki Soma are really nice, and they're colorful and they're comic booky. And at the same time, they don't ever let you forget that you're in a city at night either. But the blues are really blue, you know, that comic book Superman blue. I like that stuff. It's comic books.
It is.
Well, maybe I'll have to track it down then. I really enjoyed the last Dick Tracy series. So,
yeah.
And I was going to get this one. They were out, and they'll be like, oh, they'll be back in next time. We'll get your copy.
The characterization of Tracy is good, don't you think, Kevin? I mean, he's a little more freewheeling than he was depicted in the last series, where it was a little more hard-nosed, crimey. But it's fun to see him being a little more whimsical.
Yeah, he's not just, he was just so manic and obsessive with everything in the other one. But that was, you know, that went with the pacing, too.
Well, like, so you're saying Dick Tracy was really about stopping criminals as opposed to stopping and smelling the roses? It seems
I don't know, because there's a point where he doesn't have his talking wristwatch thing. And he's like, oh, maybe I should invent something. I'm like, if you're that good with making that stuff up, I'm like, maybe you should just have a tech company and like make millions of dollars.
Acme.
He's obsessed with crime fighting. That's his thing. He's
gonna go get the bag. Sideline, make all this money and put it towards crime efforts, or getting to crime before crime happens.
No.
I'm just thinking that could be beneficial to him as well.
The thrill of the chase is in his blood. He can't. He's addicted to tracking down bad guys.
Maybe so. And then we get that future story where he's causing criminals because there's no criminals. So, he's a robot. His brain's in some kind of jar and everything. And, oh, there's so few crimes nowadays. And he has to, anyhow.
Isn't that RoboCop?
Maybe.
Isn't that Frank Miller's RoboCop?
Wait, are you saying Dick Tracy is RoboCop? Interesting.
Well, as I noted, I picked up one book from Scary Tales Publishing Presents, Lady Frankenstein and the Mummy's Brain. And this I picked up from the writer. He had a little table and I was like, oh, it caught my eye. It's a Kevin M. Glover. And the cover art, Manuel Martin and Shane George is the graphics, color, and print layout. So this, what caught my eye is they're going for a deliberately kind of retro-y feel, both with the choice of paper and the artwork. And I liked it. And it was like Lady Frankenstein and the Mummy's Brain is like a monster lover kind of throwback. So not that weird sort of horror that's not particularly graphic, but in other ways it is kind of graphic. You know, I mean, not like a modern horror where they're just going to have some cannibal slice body parts apart and trap you in weird mazes. But the kind where it's more homage to different properties. You know, like the Hammer films and that sort of thing. And this one is obviously the Descent into Frankenstein dealing with a mummy. So he had the first three issues. So I bought the first one and he says the fourth issue is coming out. If I see him in another show, I'll pick up more. I liked it. So she right now, Lady Dr. Frankenstein's descendant, is in some unlicensed hospital working in Rwanda because obviously she's undercover, not undercover, but, you know, working under assumed names. And so the society finds her and blackmails her into working on doing a brain transplant because that's what she was studying at school. And that's how she got in trouble and got kicked out of the medical profession. So what they do is they found this ancient mummy brain that they want her to transfer into this other body. So, and the reveal at the end, which I guess I'm spoiling, but it's in the title. That's where you find out that she's Victor Frankenstein's great-great-great-granddaughter. And that he had done the first brain transplant. And that's not only why they found her, because she's good at that, but also because they found him. Found out that he had done it. So it's just, if you like those kind of old-timey horror and the old-timey comic book look, I really enjoyed this. They have a website, I'll put it in the notes, Fractured Scary Tales. So, Lady Frankenstein and the Mummy's Brain, number one. A fun throwback book. And that's the kind of thing that catches my eye. Because a lot of times those indie books have a very modern look to the artwork. I'm not sure if I definitely can't do it justice in describing it, but there's definitely a way that a lot of the books look when I walk down Artist Alley, and it's the self-published guys. So if you look different, that will catch my eye. And look, you know, you draw how you draw. I can't really say that. It's just, if you find yourself in a whole section and everyone has a very similar style, you may want to, I don't know, hire someone to just do a different cover or a print or something. It just helps catch your eye because you're walking along and you're seeing that kind of modern indie self-published look. Maybe it's the coloring or the paper too. I don't know. Do you guys feel that when you're walking through and you're looking at the indie guys and their self-published stuff?
Maybe at like Fan Expo, but I'm probably not TCAF.
Well, those are like internationally.
You see over and over, but not back to back to back.
Yeah, I'm not talking like the famous super. I'm talking the day job people who haven't quit and gone all in comics, the superhero horror crime genre.
Like, are they like animators or like
do you draw
some sort of connection between like something like that?
It might be, because the figure work tends to be somewhat simplified.
Some of it's just derivative, you know? I think, you know, there's different reasons why I walk through Artist Alley at different times amongst the people who aren't like the published, you know, known as well-known creators. It usually, at first, it's to go and connect with a couple of people that I know, wherever their tables might be. And to do that, or to meet up with people, or to keep meeting up with those guys. I tend to walk through Artist Alley several different times, and a few different artists or tables or displays will catch my eye as standing out from the others. And eventually I'll walk up and down every row, but it'll be those ones that caught my eye, you know, when I wasn't looking for them to necessarily, that will be the ones that I stop at and chat with the folks.
Yeah, I guess that's it. It's just something catches your eye. And I feel like if I was tabling, I'd try and look around and make sure I had something that was different than what's around me. Or
yeah,
even if you got to get someone else to do, like I said, do a print or a cover or just something unusual, that's something that can make me stop. And then if you stop, that's half the battle. And look, I'm not going to like everything. Sometimes I stop at a table and don't buy stuff. So, but I think getting me to stop, along with having your prices pretty clearly labeled, is having something unusual there. Or not necessarily unusual, but just doesn't look like the, you know, you're doing your homemade superhero dude, and if the three guys and right next to you also have their homemade superhero dude and it looks similar, a lot of times it'll be a wash for me.
Phil. We need more Phil.
That's all I have today.
There's, you can't have more Phil.
I have a bunch of others, but it's been so long because I read all that manga in between that I just, like Kaiju Max, I read the first three seasons of that.
Oh, I read the one where they have the, don't they have the giant rabbits on the moon in that one?
Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I can't wait for the fourth season to be collected.
You up on Black Hammer, Kevin?
I think I'm behind by two issues, but I think an issue just came out today, so maybe I'm really only behind. Oh, now I'm dating the show, but that's okay. I think an issue came out yesterday, so I'm behind that issue and then the issue before, I think.
I think came out yesterday. I didn't read that one yet either.
I think you're also behind by the issue before that too, Kevin.
I'm not sure about that, Andrew.
But it was faltering there for me for a couple of issues where I'm like, okay, we know the reveal of what's what, and then the equivalent of the X-Men passing through the Siege Perilous and getting all split up and mind wiped and almost like in new situations sort of is equivalent of what kind of happened here. And it was kind of meandering for a few issues that it's like, where does it go from here? Like issue 7 has a guest artist, Rich Tomaso, and it's got Colonel Weird like traveling amongst these canceled characters.
That was the really interesting stuff before you get to the,
that was
like, well, it's always playing with comic tropes, but I guess we even have to play with the decompressed or everything gets reset trope too. So you're kind of like, after that, you're just kind of waiting for stuff to happen.
He was traveling between like the story arcs and saw Lemire and other comic creators giant cosmic abstracts with their heads in the clouds.
It was
kind of funny. But then 8 to 10 gets you back on track here, and you've got the next generation Black Hammer, you know, the daughter, the female. She's got the hammer, she's got the costume, she's got the mission, and she's going around and converting all of the old team when she finds them back to remembering who they are. So it's like for one issue. Yeah, kind of like the one issue they go to Mars to like, you know, turn barbarian or alien and get her back. And so you get kind of the story of where they're at. And it's one of those things where the bliss of the situation is very comfortable, and to be pulled out of that and have to remember all the bad stuff and sacrifice that to be the hero they once were. And be a hero again, because they're going to have another big confrontation with that, you know, Galactus type being.
Kev.
It's good though. It's getting good again.
That was the Mars stuff. Kev.
You know, when they make everyone amnesiac, that's hard for me to stick with. At least they've got this one unifying agent who's going around tapping them all on the shoulder and getting them back. So that's cool. We're finally there. She's getting the band back together, Kevin.
I mean, that's probably the least exciting issues of the book. It's not bad or anything. It's just.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's been
so much other exciting stuff. It's just like you're sort of waiting for the dominoes to fall. Well, there's no real tension. It's just, I don't know.
Wait till you read the next issue, because there's a big OMG moment related to the Black Hammer daughter girl. You'll see.
Phil, did you keep up with Black Hammer?
Yeah, I'm up to date, and I'm enjoying a lot of the spinoffs. But I'm kind of in the boat where I wanted to wrap up.
Wow. That's not going to happen.
Not because I don't enjoy it, but I always thought in my head this would be a shorter story. I didn't think it would expand into so much.
Well, it isn't that long if you're not, I mean, it's only, 20 issues in or something, if you're not reading all the side?
The side stuff is pretty important, though, because it all crosses over, in ways.
Meh.
Wow. Worst review ever.
I'll stick with the main book. I'm learning to stick with the main book, guys.
There's a lesson out there for the kids. You don't always need the tie-ins.
These tie-ins are technically part of the main book, because it fills in all the holes that they didn't explain, like of characters in their past and stuff.
So the question is, though, are you buying the Justice League Black Hammer crossover?
Sure.
I didn't even know that existed.
Oh, yeah. Hey, as weird as it was when they did the Planetary Batman or Planetary JLA thing, it was, right?
That was really good.
So if all this Black Hammer stuff has been good, so let's do it. Let's give it a try.
Yeah. It'll feel like a Justice Society, Justice League crossover, you know?
Maybe.
Right.
Maybe it'll feel like a Batman TMNT to crossover.
Well, is that a segue, Andrew?
You saw the cartoon?
I'm not a TNT guy. TMT, TMNT guy.
You know, I was going to read that, but then I decided to read what I read, so.
What is that? Is that a segue?
is this all a segue? Is this just a bit?
Because that seemed a little teasery, Kevin. Because you didn't say what you read.
Well, the thing is, neither did you, if you read that. The thing is, Judge Dredd, or maybe Batman or Spider-Man or whatever, you just like to drop in sometimes and see how something is going. So Samurai Jack has been back for a while, and he has a new story with the Lost Worlds. So I decided to hop on the first issue here, written by Paul Allor, art by Adam Bryce Thomas.
Didn't Jim Zub used to work on Samurai Jack?
Years ago.
Okay, so this is not the same series or anything.
No, because it went away. And then everyone's like, Zub keeps on relating stories of people that liked the book, but they didn't know the book existed. So the book went 20 issues or whatever, and it got canceled. There's a couple years or whatever the amount of time is in between. Then they did a mini, and this is the second mini now. And I can also relate an experience like that. I specifically have a Samurai Jack section to sell at the show, and I keep on bringing it, and it doesn't sell every show, but eventually, you get people, and they're like, I never knew there was that, and then they're excited that there's Samurai Jack comics. So I keep bringing them, because I'm like, I experience the same thing. I know people want Samurai Jack comics.
So sorry, I cut you off on that. You were given the writer, but I don't think you'd given the art team.
Adam Bryce Thomas. Don't know the artist.
Does it look like the cartoon?
like, it's not, like, it was weird because I never read, like, the other series from another artist. Like, the other series was one of the guys that, like, was involved in Samurai Jack. So it had a certain Samurai Jack look to it. But this is sort of on model. Like, it's not, like screen caps or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's not entirely there, but there's a certain cartoonish aspect to it that makes it look like Samurai Jack. But, like, I think there's more, like, comic elements to make this more like a comic, and more panels, and probably more dialogue. Because I remember looking, this is terrible, I remember looking at the previous miniseries, seeing a preview, and I'm like, no words, no words, no words. And I'm like, I don't know if I should go with this. Because that's the weird thing, right? Because a cartoon sometimes went almost an entire episode without words. And for a cartoon like that, like, that's unheard of. So if you're getting a comic like that, like, I don't know if that, like, for me, that doesn't translate as well. You're still getting 20 minutes, whether there's words or not. But the comic, like, that length isn't, you got, somehow you have to mentally figure out, okay, the length isn't going to be the same, even. So I guess that's giving Samurai Jack more words. I don't know. I enjoyed this little one-off thing, though, where he's, it looks like, see, I didn't see the last season that I don't know if it was on TV here or whatever, but I know it came out, aired in the States, and now is on iTunes or whatever. So I still haven't seen that, but it looks like Jack has been just hanging out in a cave. He has, like, a big beard and everything, and he's not being Jack. Like, he doesn't. He's just sort of, I don't know, I guess he's Sad Jack. How about that?
Sad or I Jack.
Exactly. Maybe a Tom King book. But anyways, yeah, there's this Jack robot that's, like, inspiring people in the ways of Samurai Jack. So that gets Jack out into the city again. And he's like, oh, it's a robot, must be evil. Isn't. But that's a basic premise. Like, they fight and everything, and then you get all this other Jack getting his groove back and everything. And since this is only a single-issue story, you eventually get to the point where, like, he's going to go to another world. Like, someone gives him directions. One of those great, I think it's actually a character from the show. Like, there's a lot of cool, crazy characters. Like, there's a lizard man and all these different characters, just like in the show. But I think one of them is directly from the show, that's like this dog scientist guy. And he's like, oh, yeah, he gives them complicated directions about where to go at the end of the story. And of course, Jack's just like, I can't follow these directions. So he ends up, it looks like, picking the wrong place and seeing something he's not supposed to see. And he's just like, whatever. And then it looks like he's going to end up in another world. So I guess these will just be all, like, different worlds or places, or could be different planets, I don't know. But maybe just different places of the same world he's always been stuck on. And just, you know, bumbling into adventure or whatever, like he usually does. It is cool. It's nice to just check in and have a fun adventure.
Well, I like the one and done aspect. Sounds good to me.
All right, I got one more for you. It's from Renegades Arts Entertainment, and it is The Tales of the Buddha Before He Got Enlightened by Alan Grant and John Howard. Yes, that Alan Grant. You guys heard of this book before?
I have not. Nope.
I have not.
It is 64 pages of 1, 2, and 3 page full color comics, starring a lovable portrayal of, like, a happy-go-lucky Buddha, and detailing his encounters and the life lessons he learns along the way. But mostly it's gags. And the best stuff, though, is when the strips feature Buddha alongside other historical or religious figures like Hercules and Merlin, Alexander the Great and even Jesus, and the interplay between them is hilarious because, like, they're all buddy-buddy with Buddha. Like, everybody knows the Buddha, and everybody's pals with him, so he's immediately friendly with them, and, you know, they take his advice to heart, and it's pretty funny. There's cursing, there's drug use. It's a modern-day underground comic. The coloring is really bright and vibrant. The art is really well done. It's a fun ride, and it made me think back of the old underground comic that was similar from my youth that I enjoyed so much, and that was Frank Stack's New Adventures of Jesus. So I went back and looked at the trade paperback collection I have of that stuff, which it's like 150 plus page trade paperback from Fantagraphics called The New Adventures of Jesus, The Second Coming. And it's 135 pages of strips and nice long text piece by Frank Stack and long introductions by both R. Crumb and Gilbert Shelton, who we love from doing his fabulous Furry Freak Brothers and Fat Freddy's Cat underground comics. And he and Frank Stack were buddies and peers of each other. And that's a little bit of Stack's cartooning looks like Gilbert Shelton's work. At least it looks like it's derived, inspired by his stuff. And back in the day when he started doing these Jesus comics, Stack had a legit job as a art professor at a college. So he worked under the pseudonym Fulbert Sturgeon, he kept the FS that he had signed all the artwork as, which was his Frank Stack initials, but he needed to come up with a pseudonym. So he went with Fulbert Sturgeon so that people might think that it was Gilbert Shelton who did it. So he wouldn't be, the figure wouldn't be pointed at him. And these strips are like hippie Jesus telling stories of various lengths. They start out being he's telling tales from the good book, and it has like a little picture of a character of Jesus reading the Bible next to the titles saying, "Ooh, this is a really good book." And he's, you know, giving his version, the underground comics version of, you know, some of the parables that we are familiar with. And then there's also adventures of him in the 20th century. So you have him coming across, you know, various facets of modern society. And it's fun, clever, whimsical, both of them, both the New Adventures of Jesus and Tales of the Buddha. Fun stuff.
Yeah, there aren't that many intentionally funny comics that make me laugh, but those Fat Freak Brothers and Fat Freddy's Cat still do it, no matter how many times I've read it. They always make me chuckle, some of them.
Gru, too. Gru, a lot of Sergio stuff still makes me chuckle.
All right, it sounds like that was a pretty good treat for everybody. A full load of four indie comic book hosts hosting Indie Comic Book Talk. Thanks, everyone, right? For listening.
And that's what this podcast was supposed to be, right, Andrew? It was like when we were doing Marvel Noise and we had too much book. We had books we wanted to talk about. And here we go. We got all these books off our chests.
I thought it was all con men all the time and dealing about life, the universe, and everything.
Well, yeah, I think those are the episodes I'm not on.
Definitely.
Well, we always keep it indie here, and indie means whatever we want it to mean.
So indie.
Thanks for listening. We'll hopefully continue to make episodes, but you know, it's hard. And
what?
I appreciate
the easiest thing I did all day.
Is this our last episode?
I hope not.
The long streak has ended, Andrew. It seems like they're coming up really easy.
Giving up.
I've had more effortful bowel movements than this show just was. We can do it.
But yeah, thanks everybody. Talk to you later.
Weekly show. Such confidence from the voice of Indie Comic Book Noise.